This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Rita Liu, and it's open for business in just a moment. But before we get there, we talk about electricity, by the way. Before we get there, Richard Bradbury, what are we talking about at noon?
Can I just preface this by saying don't shoot the messenger? Because there's a list that's just come out over the weekend how Singapore has just been ranked as the world's best city for street food.
Oh, I've got a Singaporean here in the room.
Right, exactly. And that's why it's awkward to be talking about this. Now, this ranking comes from a magazine called CEO World Magazine, right? And a lot of people are saying, well, who are they? They have 12.4 million readers, and it's mainly aimed at business travelers, corporate travel agents, and that kind of thing. And one of the four factors that affects these rankings is hygiene of the places looked at.
Okay.
Like it or not, some of our food outlet places here in Malaysia, particularly street food, are not as hygienic as we would like.
Mm-hmm.
And our question is whether or not that has affected the fact that we're not even in the top 50 of this list.
I tell you.
So our question is, how much is hygiene a factor when you choose to eat street food? Let us know. 018-789-8899. Get us on Twitter or on Instagram. We're at BFM Radio. Question again, how much is hygiene a factor when you choose to eat street food?
Now, I sometimes don't think twice about leaving my bathroom lights on or having my air conditioning at full blast while trying to sleep. But then I'm reminded about how much I take electricity for granted. So last year, Mestec set a target 20% of the country's electricity to be generated from renewable energy resources by 2030. But how do we actually achieve this? Maybe taking a leaf out of our neighbouring Singapore's book is the way forward. And here to discuss that with me is Martin Lim, the CEO of Electrify, the company behind Singapore's first retail electricity marketplace, electrify.sg. Welcome, Martin.
Hello, hi, good morning.
We won't talk about food.
Don't shoot the token Singaporean.
The token Singaporean, I tell you, okay, he's here. Okay, don't shoot the messenger. He just happens to be Singaporean. But it's very interesting you talk about Electrify SG. But before that, I know this was something you started in 2017. What were you doing before that?
Interestingly, I didn't come from the energy industry. I'm relatively a newbie. I was always in advertising and media and business strategy before that. So yeah, I kind of stumbled and fell into energy.
How did you stumble into this?
It was very much a chance conversation with somebody who introduced me to the business of retail electricity. This was back in 2016. And at that point, like many Singaporeans back then, I was like, well, what's retail electricity? How do you retail it? Isn't SingPower SP the only provider of electricity?
Right.
And that's how I started learning about it and realized that, wow, this was happening right under my nose and I didn't know about it.
Okay, so this is, and of course, I'm just reading, this is a platform where residential and commercial customers input their current energy plan. So now they're given a new customized selection of plans to choose from. So starting in 2017, when it was announced that Singapore Power would no longer be the sole electricity provider starting in late 2018. But that's something that happened even earlier before then, right? In 2001 in Singapore.
Yes, exactly. So our deregulation journey started back in 2001. The deregulation journey was very gradual. The government started back in 2001 by
ahead of the game in the way.
Not particularly. There were other markets well ahead of us, and we learned from them. We learned from the UK. We learned from Australia. So we started deregulating back in 2001. We started with the very large consumers like the airports and the ports and so on. And gradually we lowered the threshold until 2015, where the minimum requirement was really if you consume more than 2,000 kilowatt hours. At that time, in 2015, 2,000 kilowatt hours was a power bill of about $400+ in Singapore. So you have a small business with maybe 5-10 people in office.
It's affordable.
Yeah. You qualify to switch out to a retailer.
Okay, now you use a pricing engine called Fibonacci for your quote. So how does it calculate the best plan across from the many retailers?
Okay, there was a piece of intelligence tried to build. So what it did in the beginning really was this. At the time we founded the company in 2015, there were already 24 retailers in the market. But you got to realize back then there was very little ironic. There was very little intelligence insofar as prices were set very manually.
Right.
A pricing team within the retailer would calculate prices, work on spreadsheets and so on, declare a price for the week after they hedged the prices, and they provided to salespeople.
Hmm.
Then the salespeople carry these prices and go meet customers, and then there's a long negotiation session and so on. We felt that this was too complicated, too long, it won't work online. So we created an engine that would calculate all these with the variability as well.
Okay, so it's all, in a way, on demand. So it'll be calculated based on how much usage you have. So it's it's not a flat rate.
That's right.
Okay, so and so how has it been, the uptake in Singapore?
Wow, the uptake. So... So let's talk about the OEM, the open electricity market. I think that's far, far more relevant. So Singapore went to full deregulation at the end of 2018, in November 2018, in fact. And to date, I think the EMA, the regulator, has reported, I think to date, we have just over 40% have converted over to a retailer. So that's a total addressable market of 1.3 million residential users.
Right.
So 40% of that is really, really significant. You've got probably about 500,000 users already switching over. And that's very, very significant because in most other deregulated markets, first-year conversion, it's single digits. Japan, if I recall correctly, a few years ago when they deregulated, I think first year was something like 4% or less. So I think part of the success that we had having so many conversions really was because we're a very small city, very, very dense. There's a lot of online access. And I think a lot of Singaporeans are very media savvy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the retailers learned that game really, really well and they use it very, very effectively to outreach to people.
Right.
On top of that, there are also a lot of roadshows. In the open electricity market for residential market, there are 13 retailers allowed to participate.
Yeah.
So to frame that, there are 33, I think, retailers right now in the market operating selling contracts, of which the regulators only allowed the 13 of them who have vetted their approval processes to sell to the residents.
So what are investments like for you to start something like this? Did you come into this space with already a number of players? I mean, what were you thinking?
So when we started the business back in 2017, really the issue was this. We realised that despite Singapore having deregulated since 2001, right through to 2017, so in that those last 16, 17 years, there was still a lot of opacity in the market. At that time, by our reckoning, about 30 to 40% of customers, C&I, commercial and industrial customers, had not switched. And it was really, really strange. You couldn't understand why. Because in the Singapore context, when you switch to a retailer, savings on your energy bill is anywhere from 20 plus to possibly even 30%, which is very, very significant. So why wouldn't you take 20-30% of your power bill?
Because
if you run a restaurant, for example,
your
bill's in the thousands, that's a lot of money you save. So we realized it was because of a lack of transparency. A lot of consumers didn't realize it was such a thing. And again, it's not terribly unusual because the government does make effort to educate people about it. It takes out newspaper ads and so on. But I think it's a matter of the subject itself. People tend not to think about energy, as you pointed out just now, right? You don't think about it when you turn on the AC and so on. So it's not a top of mind topic. So when people don't think about it, not aware of it, and therefore they don't even know it exists. Funny stories in the early days, I used to do a lot of the BD work. I used to meet new customers and so on. I've had situations where big companies, chairman of the board, that kind of thing, outright said, "Oh, there's no such thing. You're a scam. You're making this up. I buy power from SP. How can you buy power from SP and you get a discount? There's no such thing." And this is despite us showing him that, look, it's on the regulated websites. The information's all out there. It's public knowledge. And it is there. The mechanisms are in place.
Right. Okay. Now, in August 2019, you announced that you're looking to raise 5 million in Series A funding by the end this year. And this is intended for further development of the peer-to-peer energy trading platform. How is this coming along?
So we started talking to parties. This whole piece came about because we were approached by a number of different companies, all within the energy space, asking about whether they could invest into the business itself. We've been very, very clear that we're not looking specifically for extra money, but we want a strategic partnership.
Right.
And that's very, very important because we're a small company. We're barely 20 people. every country we try to enter into, we have to work with a local utility mm-hmm. or a large retailer. So like Australia, for example, we hope to work with some of the large retailers there. In Malaysia, we're trying to do a pilot together with TNBX. Mm-hmm. In Thailand, we're trying to do some work together with PEA and MEA as well. So we have to work with these larger entities. Right. And very often, we'll need some access to the market provided by a strategic partner.
Okay, when you say strategic in what way?
Strategic insofar as this. So this was a question was asked of us by another publication in investment, and we outlined very clearly the kind of investor we're looking for. So but in particular, we were not looking for the traditional VCs. For instance, traditional VC would enter into an investment arrangement, a term sheet or whatever, and they would ask and look at returns within 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that is far, far too short, because within the energy space itself, the horizon's not measured just in a few years. The horizon's measured in decades. Mm. So we need investors who come in, who understand this, who understand how the energy game is played. And also the business model itself. The right. development time is significantly long. We're talking about infrastructure play here. Mm. So for instance, having to engage with a utility, for instance, the sales cycle just to get to a point of deployment could take anywhere from 2 to 3 years. So it's not something you get into in 2 months, you make a sale and then you move on to the next. It's not that kind of a business.
Right. We'll talk about other disruptions that's happening in this space in just a moment. I'm speaking to Martin Lim of Electrify. Stay tuned to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Begin fun moments. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to Open for Business. Good morning, Frida Liu here. If you just join us, I'm speaking to Martin Lim, co-founder and CEO of Electrify, the first retail electricity marketplace out from Singapore. And of course, they're venturing to Malaysia as well. You know, we're having this really interesting conversation about how, you know, this is changing it is being disrupted, right? Yeah. And what do you see causing the disruption in this space?
In terms of deregulation, I think what's really, really interesting was this. At the end of last year, the energy minister, Yeo Bei-yen, she made the big announcement that Malaysia is getting deregulated in 3 years. Mm. I think that took a lot of people by surprise. Mm. But what we found even more surprising, very, very exciting really, was that when we engaged with TNB, so we've been talking to TNB for just over a year now, we found that it was incredibly dynamic and they were all gearing up with restructuring and all, and it was... wow, it was really eye-opening for us. Mm. And I think the disruption is really interesting in that you're expecting a lot of new business models. And right now, all the processes are still very much in flux.
Right.
It's only recently that I think Minister announced again that there would be likely be no wholesale market for electricity until 2029.
Right.
So things are evolving and things are changing. It's very, very exciting because every quarter, I reckon, you will have new developments, new announcements about how the market will grow and evolve. And I think TNB is taking a lot of these things in its stride and doing a lot of things to disrupt as well.
Hmm. Okay, wait. In July 2019, Malaysia Kidney reported a government was again conducting a study in the electricity market in Malaysia. Could be liberalised in the same way as Singapore. So how do you think this will work out though?
I think it's not going to be a quick journey. It'll take quite a while. If you look at Singapore as an example, it's not a great example, obviously, but we're so small. We took 10 plus years to get the whole job done. A lot of things still have to be done. Hmm. You can't just say, I want to deregulate it by tomorrow and snap your fingers and it happens.
It's not for the lack of technology, it's the lack of process. It's the lack of
process.
Mindset, change, that's that kind of thing, right?
I think mindset comes last.
Legacy systems, that sort of
that's
thing.
That's right. So legacy systems are not just hardware and software. Mm. It's also people and processes. Yeah. And also when you talk about mindset also happens with the people as well. Mm. So you could change the processes, put in these wonderful new processes, bring a whole new way of doing things for people to benefit them. But people aren't aware of it, they're not educated enough. That's going to take a little while for them to accept and for them to understand. Mm. But I think it's going to be a bit of a learning journey and a growing journey as well. It'll take a while.
Right. And this whole idea of how individual producers of energy can also sell excess energy to other consumers, right? This peer-to-peer thing. You think that will be also a bit of a mindset change? I'm just thinking to myself, right? Would I is it a difficult process? Do I want to do it? It's so convenient right now. You just get the bill, you pay the bill. You don't think about anything, right?
Exactly, exactly, right? But the question here is this, right? Why should it be difficult? Why should it be different from that? I think it's very, very key that all these things, all these functions are tied into your bill. It makes it very, very convenient. A single point of payment. I get the bill at the end of the month, I pay it, or I receive payment against it. So the whole idea of peer-to-peer, and it was recently brought up, CEDA recently, I think about 1 or 2 weeks ago, they launched, they announced the launch of the peer-to-peer trading platform pilot that they're doing in Malaysia. We're working with TNBX to be part of the pilot as well. So what's interesting really is this. Sometime at the beginning of the year, we were approached by a large Japanese conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
Their core business has been to develop power plants, energy generation power plants around the world. And they came to talk to us in Singapore. And we were rather surprised. We were saying, look, why does this huge company want to talk to a small, tiny little startup out of Singapore? And what's interesting really was this. Towards the end of the presentation, they revealed that internally, they identified three massive disruptors to their business over the next 20 years. First was renewable energy, which was actually a no-brainer. Second thing was EVs, electric vehicles, because they represent a lot of batteries, mobile battery systems on a power grid. A third thing took us by surprise, and it was peer-to-peer. We didn't realise the full import of this until maybe another couple of months later when we were in Australia talking about business there with the regulators. And it was then that we realised that, goodness gracious, the degree to which people could empower themselves by building their own energy generation systems, because you can't really stop that right now. Can buy own solar panels. I mean, goodness gracious, IKEA is offering to sell solar panels from their stores.
My good, assemble it yourself.
Exactly, a whole DIY thing. So the accessibility is there. And if people start putting their own power sources at their homes, that takes a burden off the grid. And if the burden's taken off the grid, then the regulators in the future would have very little reason or need to call for a tender for a new power plant. Because people are then far more self-sufficient. And there are a lot of good things that can come out of it.
Right. Okay. So you were talking about how that was a straight. You talked to Australia. You're also looking at Thailand as well. What's the conversation like in Thailand?
So really, really interesting. Every country we go into, the regulations are staggeringly different. We always have to do a bit of a soft pivot in every country. So in Thailand, for example, what's really challenging right now is that the Thai energy regulation doesn't allow for what we call exports. So an export is when you generate more power than you consume. That surplus gets discharged back to the grid. Basically, you're giving power back to the grid. In other markets that are deregulated, like in Singapore, you're paid an amount right, for the energy you generate. And you put back into the grid. You're paid for your export. But in Thailand, for instance, there is no such regulation. There's no such framework. So what they do instead is they consider that the grid out of Bangkok, for example, or on the whole, it's not stable enough for you to inject power into the grid. So therefore, they discourage you from doing it. If you export 10 kilowatts or less, you're not paid anything because that's a very, very small amount.
Right.
Anything more than that, you're stopped from doing so. You have to put in processes in place, either hardware or software, to stop you leaking power into the grid. So regulation has to change. They're also experimenting now with peer-to-peer as well. Recently, there was a sandbox project that was created by the ERC, the Electricity Regulation Commission in Thailand. We're talking now to the PEA, the Provincial Electricity Authority, about running a larger scale proof of concept on how we can use peer-to-peer to benefit people, to allow them to increase the amount of solar they generate and sell that excess to their neighbours. The idea is actually really sustainable and very, very good because, number one, if I can induce or incentivize you to build more solar, that's good for the whole grid. But secondly, if you're able to generate power and consume it within your community, that reduces strain and load within the whole network itself. So that's also a good thing.
Right. So I just want to ask you, you know, I guess this is a journey. It's going to be a long journey, right?
That's
right. What's in line for Electrify 2020 and in the years to come, the light at the end of the tunnel?
Light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to be a very, very long tunnel, unfortunately. But for 2020, we're actually very excited. We've been approached by, like I said earlier on about the whole investor conversation, we're definitely looking into completing that round of investment. We've been approached by other energy companies who've offered to open up markets for us in Australia as well as Spain in Europe. Mm. There's talk also about doing similar projects in Indonesia as well. And what we're looking at in 2020 also is to actually enhance and go a little bit beyond just merely peer-to-peer. As I've explained to other people before, having think of peer-to-peer, the idea of doing peer-to-peer energy trading as a vehicle. We're designing a new car, so to speak, right? But to get the car moving, I had to have an engine. But now that I've got the engine, I can take the engine out and put it into a truck, a sports car, a hatchback, if you will, or whatever else. So now we're looking to all these different iterations. So one business model we're looking at and we're experimenting, we've talked to Australia about this, and this is the state capital, Canberra. We talked to the chief minister about this on one of the roundtable sessions, and they liked this idea, which is the idea of being able to use a settlement system, like a peer-to-peer platform, for a community battery system. So how that works really is this, and this is something I speak about quite frequently, which is in this day and age now, electricity as we use and consume it, it's not about the engineering so much anymore. It's not about the electrons, as it were. It's very much a data and financial play. It's very much a transactive energy layer. So if you had a community battery system, the challenge isn't how would you connect the solar panels on your from your home through to this community battery that your community shares. The challenge isn't that, because we know how to do this. We know how to do the engineering, the cabling, the connectors and the controllers and so on. What we haven't totally figured out is how do you settle and move the energy and make sure everyone gets an equitable share of the energy.
Right.
If you generate, say, 100 units and you put it into the battery in the day, but you come home at night and you want to consume maybe 80, what happens to that extra 20 units that's left in the battery? Or if you go on vacation, your solar panels keep generating power and gets dumped into this battery. Or your neighbour has no generation, but he needs to consume some power. How do you move this energy back and forth? How do you settle a payment? And that's important because if you can settle a payment or transact, then you're able to have cost recovery. When you have cost recovery, then suddenly that project is bankable, that project is feasible, and other players can come in to build it. You then get greater benefits. That project could be a co-op-owned project, it could be a council-owned, government-owned, it could be a privately-owned project, it could be a battery company that says, well, I think the money makes sense, let's go put one there and everybody benefits. I think that's what's really key.
All right. Thanks for being with us. Martin Lim, the CEO of Electrify, talking about power to the people. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.